the walls they have erected to protect them from the view of the people wearing dirty rags and begging for their food, while they're serving up a banquet for the membership inside. The poor man on the bottom's contemplating suicide, 'cause he feels worthless. His hunger pains beyond belief. There's no relief. We're gonna bring back Coxie's army and take his message to the street.
That was Eddie Starr with The Return of Coxie's Army. Thanks, Eddie, wherever you are. I want to talk today about Starbucks and what's going on there with the union organizing on their in their Manhattan store. To get a perspective on what life is like for a barista working at Starbucks, we need to do a little background here. Howard Schultz likes to call the workers, the baristas at Starbucks, partners, quote unquote. And one of his favorite sayings is that nobody who works for Starbucks is left behind. The average barista starts somewhere around $7.50 an hour. They don't get enough hours in a week to qualify for full-time. They're offered health care and other benefits, which they have to pay for. But their checks aren't big enough to be able to afford that in most cases. So once again, we have people who put in some pretty difficult hours. If you've ever been into a Starbucks, you know what the lineup is like. You know how few people they have behind the counter to take care of those people, the customers, and you know that they're hurrying as fast as they can. What I didn't realize until I spoke with Daniel Gross was that burns were a major factor in working at a Starbucks coffee shop. Somehow I guess I had the idea that it was a minimal risk job, but when you think about it, that hot steam can do a lot of damage if anything goes wrong. And under high pressure, high speed conditions like that, things go wrong quite often. At any rate, if you take the average annual wage of one of Starbucks baristas, and that average annual Starbucks barista wage will buy you 1 mile of travel. Here in Kettle Falls, 40 miles south of the Canadian border, a Starbucks barista can get 1 mile from this radio station on Highway 395. And from 1 mile down the road, they can almost see the AutoView drive-in situated between here and Colville. They can almost see it. They haven't gotten there yet. But the other fact is that most of the workers in this country, in fact, all of the workers in this country, cannot make it to even Colville, 9 miles down the road. And less than 2% of the population would be able to afford to get within 30 mile radius of Spokane, 90 miles down the road. The CEO of United Airlines, who just robbed all of United Airlines workers' pensions with his $4.5 million bonus for this year, that $4.5 million bonus would get him to Milton Freewater, Oregon, from here. But paying the same rate per mile as the baristas, who can only get a mile down the road, Howard Schultz is standing on a hill overlooking Las Vegas. Now you tell me that he hasn't left somebody behind with that kind of a discrepancy in wages. In fact, from where Howard Schultz stands, he can't see a single Starbucks employee other than himself if he happens to be looking in a mirror. And he can't see the majority of the people in the world from there. There's just an elite few within his view, and of course there is a few who've gone way beyond where Howard Schultz is and are in gambling in downtown Las Vegas. But and of course there's Bill Gates, who's somewhere around El Paso. But if you took the entire world on that basis, 99.8% of the population of the world would be somewhere between here and Colville, and most of them would be within throwing rock distance of Kettle Falls. So fed up with low wages, fed up with dangerous working conditions, fed up with the always the promise of benefits that couldn't be afforded, the fighting baristas in downtown Manhattan organized to form a union last year, and they called it they went with the IWW, and they formed the Starbucks Union. And on June 24 last year I interviewed Daniel Gross for this program, and I'm going to replay that interview now.
Daniel, could you explain to us how the pay works at Starbucks?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Glenn. Part of the reason we got together at my Starbucks to form a fighting union was the fact that we live in grinding poverty. We work at this highly successful company. In fact, fiscal year 2003 was a record year for Starbucks. They took in over $4 billion in sales. Starbucks themselves concede that the baristas, those of us that make the drinks, who run the cash registers and clean the store, we do all the work at the store, they admit that we're the cornerstone and foundation of a Starbucks coffee shop. Yet, we certainly do not share in the success of the company. When I started there, and New York City baristas in general start at $7.75 an hour. After 6 months on the job, I received a raise based on my highly favorable performance review. They gave me 11 cents. In other parts of the country, Starbucks baristas start as low as $6.50 an hour.
And I understand they have a health care program there, Daniel. Can you explain how that works and how you have to, or how many hours you have to work to qualify?
Yeah, this is actually one of the great boondoggles orchestrated by Chairman Howard Schultz. You'll hear Starbucks all the time talk about how they offer these incredible benefits to their part-time employees. What they don't tell you is that they degraded all of the barista positions, the people that do the main work at the store, into part-time jobs. Not a single barista in the United States of America is a full-time employee. They've degraded them all to part-time status. So the way it works is if you work 240 hours a quarter, Starbucks enables you to purchase health care from the company. Now keep in mind, with part-time hours and a poverty wage, at the end of the month, you can barely pay the most, you know, critical necessities that you owe. Rent, utilities, and putting a bit of food on the table. So, although you have a theoretical ability to purchase health care, there's just no money left over to do it. So, many, many baristas don't participate in the health program or any of the other so-called benefits. In fact, we've issued a public challenge to Starbucks. We'd like them to come clean with the American people and let them know the percentage of Starbucks baristas that participate in the health plan and participate in the 401k. Starbucks will not part with those two critical statistics because it'll show and put the lie to their claim. From our experience, not a significant amount of baristas are able to afford to participate in these plans.
Mm-hmm. What are the requirements to participate in the 401k program?
You have to be there, you know, for a certain amount of time to participate, and you know it's the same dynamic, the same situation where when you're living such a marginal existence, making so little money, you know, they don't even tell you, they won't even guarantee you any amount of hours per week. I could work 25 hours this week, 32 the next, and 18 the week after. And, you know, that's something we're certainly addressing with the union.
Mm-hmm. Do they make any contribution to the 401k if you don't, or does it require a contribution from you first?
Oh, you absolutely have to contribute yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, how did you wind up being a labor organizer as opposed to just a disgruntled employee?
Well, so we're working in the shop, my coworkers and I. We're taking home a meager paycheck. And it turns out, and this is a surprise to myself, and it is, I think, to a lot of folks, Starbucks Coffee Shop is actually a very unsafe place to work. There are two major problems as far as workplace safety. They all stem from the fact that management refuses to schedule enough people on the shop floor to meet at a safe speed the truly extraordinary demand that a Starbucks coffee shop meets in any given day. So the inevitable result is, one, burns are commonplace. I've seen some horrible burns. Minor burns, have no place in any safe workplace, are the norm, the standard. They happen all the time. Perhaps the most pressing issue as far as safety is the epidemic repetitive strain injuries amongst baristas at Starbucks. Because you're forced to work so quickly to meet the demand you're faced with, you're compelled to work in a very very unsafe manner. You know, you're moving really, really quickly. I can't emphasize the point enough.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, a Starbucks coffee shop is an ergonomic disaster. The company has shown absolutely no respect for the physical integrity, the bodies of their workers, the baristas. There's completely unnecessary and cumbersome work areas, bending, reaching, stretching, and the logical conclusion, you know, this is not an oversight by the company. The very logical, predictable conclusion are these sometimes even debilitating musculoskeletal ailments associated with these kind of workplaces and repetitive motions.
How does Starbucks respond to workplace injuries, are they self-insured, or is there a state program in New York that they're required to?
Our experience talking to baristas at my store and others is Starbucks typically attempts to deny responsibility. I'm not sure of their exact their coverage, but because we're working for a very meager paycheck and working in an unsafe workplace and going home sore every night, and on top of that, despite the fact that Starbucks talks about their mission statement and guiding principles requiring respect and dignity for their workers, we were treated in a humiliating way, getting arbitrary written warnings, corrective actions, they call them here, and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And individually, it quickly became clear when we attempted to address grievances, the Starbucks approach is to smile and shake your hand and tell you to follow up, and of course, nothing happens. So it quickly became clear for me and my coworkers that we have to get together on this and work together, and that's what we did. We formed the union.
Why did you choose the IWW?
We wanted a union that was our own. We wanted a union that we controlled. We didn't want to go from having corporate and union bosses. We didn't want to go, rather, from just having corporate bosses to having union and corporate bosses. So that was the main issue. Second big attraction for us at IWW, frankly, was the nuts and bolts financial issue. We liked the fact that the IWW had reasonable dues. Because we're really towards the lower end of the wage scale out there, you know, every dollar counts. So the affordable dues were a big attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And the third and possibly most important reason was we looked to the retail sector and we saw that the mainstream trade union movement hadn't made much headway in the sector we work in. So we really did think it would take a vastly different model to really tackle this project in a successful way. We like the solidarity unionism focus that much of the IWW represents, and we like the social movement aspect. We really feel that to really on a large scale and really meaningfully and tangibly improve the lives of ourselves and our store, retail workers in general, and even low-wage service workers even more generally, it really will take a movement. And we are asking our friends and neighbors and allies around the country in the labor community and community-based organizations to really help us out with this. But we really want to, you know, sincerely and humbly ask for people's support. The best way to get plugged into the campaign is to check out our website. The address is www.starbucksunion.org. Once again, that's www.starbucksunion.org.
I'll mention that at the end of the program again, too.
Great.
How long did it take you to convince your coworkers to organize?
Well, we've been working on this for several months, of course, and because the modern corporate workplace is so tyrannical and overwhelming and oppressive, it really has been quite profound for us to raise our head up, to speak truth, to say, no, we have a fighting union now that you're going to deal with, and the power dynamic has changed like that.
And where's the process at now?
Well, Starbucks is attempting to obstruct the union vote. They've used a very crude legalistic maneuvers. They've used threats. They've used promises to people. All kinds of unfair labor practices to try to either deny us a vote outright or skew a vote by illicit means. We argued our case before the Labor Board on June 2nd. We're confident we'll prevail on the merits. Our legal team is confident. Importantly, though, if we are denied an election, the campaign will continue. My coworkers and I have pledged to fight on. The NLRB piece was merely one tool in a much larger direct action toolbox that we are prepared to deploy.
Well, great. Well, I wish you luck. I hope that things go well for you, and everybody back there should know that we're watching and supporting the baristas in New York. And we're doing a whole series of stories on Starbucks and their business practices, so that should be of some help to all of you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for your time, Daniel.
Great being on.
And that was the Daniel Gross in June 2004 interview with me. Since that interview, Starbucks lost a National Labor Relations Board decision on the issue as to whether a single store could organize or if it had to be the entire chain or a region. The NLRB ruled that a single store had the right to do that. But, of course, Starbucks appealed the decision, and of course, that tied everything up. On July 1st, 2004, Starbucks Union announced its support for fair trade coffee, in part because of Starbucks' intransigence. They decided to upgrade their alliance with the fair trade coffee producers in third world countries. Daniel Gross said, "We see our struggles for humane wages and working conditions as united. No longer will Starbucks be allowed to run roughshod over the baristas or the coffee farmers." Fair trade certification is an independent international monitoring system which guarantees a fair price that goes directly to farmers. Fair trade producers operate on an environmentally sound basis in small-scale democratic cooperatives. Even Starbucks CEO Orrin Smith acknowledges the plight of coffee farmers, yet still the company refuses to budge. According to Smith, the people in these countries are challenged to feed themselves, to clothe their family, to give them any kind of an education. This is an incredibly marginal existence. And yet, knowing all that, they still have to be pushed to use and acknowledge fair trade coffee. It's that old outlook that low wages are good for poor people. The Starbucks Union got a favorable ruling from the National Labor Relations Board on July 2nd. On July 22nd, 2004, they announced that they had filed an unfair labor practices complaint against Starbucks, claiming that the company was breaking the law with impunity as it attempts to impede the certification election set to take place by the end of the month. The well-documented charges contends that Starbucks made numerous threats of wage cuts, gave bribes to sway votes, and selectively enforced a no-distribution policy that quashes workers' freedom of speech. In addition, the company is manipulating the voting unit in an effort to manufacture its desired result, keeping Starbucks workers from voting to certify a union and rising out of poverty. According to the article or the news release, there are indications that Starbucks chairman Howard Schultz is personally leading an anti-union campaign while the day-to-day propaganda and intimidation is run by the regional director of operations, Alex Perez. Starbucks has also retained high-priced union-busting lawyers to deny workers the freedom to vote their conscience. Anthony Polanco, an employee at the store, says, "We remain steadfast in our belief that Starbucks workers deserve better. A poverty wage is not sufficient to live a decent life. The union is here to stay." July 29th, News release says the Bush administration-controlled National Labor Relations Board accepted for review yesterday an appeal by Starbucks of the IWW Industrial Union 660 victory that allows workers at a single store in a chain to vote in a union certification election. The decision effectively disenfranchises workers because, regardless of the outcome of the appeal, the result of the election is suspended for several years while the case is being decided. Daniel Gross says Starbucks and its union-busting law firm have succeeded in obliterating our right to vote. The company has established beyond a shadow of a doubt that it follows an extreme anti-worker union avoidance policy. While Starbucks claims to be an excellent place to work, and even the Fortune 500 magazine says that Starbucks is one of the best places to work in the country, Daniel Gross says they're as bad as Walmart. I'm curious how the magazine Fortune 500 has any way of knowing what kind of working conditions the baristas work under. You don't think that a magazine by, for, and of the rich is going to bother to talk to anybody in a green apron when they're making their decision as to whether Starbucks is a great place to work or not. There have been several developments since then, but as it stands at this point, the Starbucks union is still fighting Starbucks, trying to get working conditions improved. They've gone to the standard IWW mode of resistance, united resistance against the company, without a contract. So they've declared themselves a union shop, and they're acting accordingly, whether Starbucks agrees with that or not. And that's been a standard tactic of the IWW. Ordinarily, the IWW doesn't make agreements with employers. They generally act in their own interest, and the company has the option to make their own choices. We'll get back to more Starbucks issues in another program, but for today, you've been listening to Labor News Radio. My name is Glenn Lang. I want to thank everybody for supporting KITR, LP in Kettle Falls, Washington, and I want to welcome all of our new listeners to the conversation, and thanks for your support as well.